passada no centro.
Hey good people, here's another episode of Soccer Talk FC Podcast. My name is Dejai. On this episode, I reviewed the quarterfinal of the World Cup 2002 with Jide. We shared our views on the four teams remaining in the competition and their chances to make the final. We discussed football development and gave reasons why some particular teams tend to always lose on penalties. We discussed the resilience of Morocco, the tenacity of Croatia, France's talents, and of course, the genius of Lionel Messi.
Yeah, well, hello guys, nice to be talking football again, always nice. Anyways, looking at the quarterfinals, it is very obvious the match where you could say the two teams are evenly matched and both were like on the same level with youths and men in terms of experience and all should be England versus France. I think that's about the biggest match, right? Because
yeah,
I mean, when you look at it, the caliber of players involved, the level of development of both teams, the kind of followership and popularity, and both teams are past winners, you know. So I guess England and France. And I was particularly impressed by the match. I think it's probably the best match for me in the World Cup. The technical level was very high. Both teams played very well. It was really difficult to look at any player and say, "Oh, okay, this guy's flopped." Even though Harry Kane missed the penalty, a penalty that was decisive for England. But at the same time, I really feel that was a very, very brilliant match, high-level match. I don't know if you agree with me, though.
I totally agree with you on the technical level. And there was one thing that really stood out for me during the game. I remember we had a conversation, was it during Portugal game? And we spoke about teams these days not hitting targets. And yet, here are two teams that you watch them. They build play from back. And, I mean, you see the clarity with how well they build and they make the goalkeeper work. So it was, like you said, I would pick as my best game of the World Cup. I mean, at that technical level, seeing the all-round quality at every angle of the pitch and how both teams came out to play their game. You could see clearly what they were trying to do. And you can see that it was a game that, even though I feel England had the upper hand on the average, it was a game that whoever may have won would know that, okay, another day, the game could have gone the other way. And yeah, I'm glad that I saw that game because I didn't get to watch the first game of the day. That was the Portugal game. I didn't get to watch the Portugal game from the beginning. I didn't get to watch the Argentina versus Netherlands at all. So I prioritized this and ensured that I cleared my schedule. And I'm glad that I did for that.
Well, somehow, as destiny would have it, I also missed the first half of each of the quarterfinal matches, the other three. But I watched most of the second half, and then I saw some clips of the play of the first half. But, you know, maybe this World Cup has been a little bit difficult for me to follow, I mean, because of other engagements. But I think the quarterfinals generally delivered entertainment. I was really impressed also with how the Dutch went against the Argentina, particularly in the last 15 minutes of the 90, you know. And then they came back from 2-goal down. I was not expecting that because I thought they were dead and out, but they did really give themselves a shout. That was a very good comeback. Unfortunately, I mean, they missed all their penalties. I mean, the Dutch have not been lucky when it comes to penalties, have they?
No, they haven't. I remember the one that really resonated with me right now was the Euro 2000. Euro 2000 when they played the semi-final of the Euro against Italy. I think it was another life-changing moment for me because that was a game where They had all the ball. I think they hit the pole twice. They had two penalties in the game, played by two different people, and yet they lost. Italy got a red card. Italy played most of the game with 10 men. Italy had everybody behind the ball, and yet the Netherlands still lost. I mean, it's one of the games that, growing up, I always think about, and I just like, football, just like life, can be very, very cruel. But then... reflecting back to the game here, I little saw the game, and on the average, I felt Argentina deserved it better. I felt the Dutch were too conservative going into that game. They considered a second goal before they started playing football. And immediately after they got that miraculous last-minute equalizer, I felt all through the extra time, they just went back into the default mode again. Now, I have seen a couple of criticisms about on Louis van Gaal for it. But again, I know that they don't have the level of, the quality of attackers they've had over the years. And while I'm not making an excuse, I felt it would have done better also if they had actually attacked. But then, hey, quarterfinal for this Dutch national team, I don't think is a failure.
Well, I don't think so either, but I want to also cast your mind back to France 98. You said Euro 2002 resonated with you, but I think they lost to Brazil also by penalty or penalty shootout. So,
yes, they lost. The difference is France 98, they played against a very good Brazilian team, a Brazilian team that matched them. Euro 2000, I mean, they dominated from the minute to minute 120. So that's why that particularly stood out.
Okay, but just to draw a life lesson from that, I mean, if you're doing the same thing over and over again and it's not working, is there anything that maybe they could have done, they could do differently? I mean, sometimes some people say madness is when you do the same thing, the same way over and over again. So, I mean, this penalty shootout thing, how does it come across for you? Because I mean, it's come back to haunt the Dutch like a couple of times.
Yes, and in a bit to address this, I will bring Spain into this bubble. It is something also that Spain particularly has suffered from when it comes to football over the years. I mean, at the Euros, to Italy, you in time past, Russia, last World Cup. I think since they won in 2010, I think like 7 of their 8 competitions have been about penalties. And I was thinking about it, and I was thinking, okay, so the question shouldn't be, why are you not winning penalties? I personally feel the question is, why are you getting into penalties? And that is why, that is how I will address the question that you have asked for me, because I feel that these two countries, particularly Spain, you keep doing the same things over. You keep, and this could even be much bigger than just the World Cup. It could go deep down to how these countries have academized football, how they train footballers to be. Okay, for instance, let me try to give an example. If I were a young chap who is developing, who is watching the Spanish national team right now, who has hopes of playing for the Spanish national team in future, you think I would rather model my game around becoming an Aduriz, or will I model my game to try to become much more of somebody who fits into a tiki-taka? You get what I mean? Because the way Spain have been over the years is as good, and it also reflects on Holland. It's as good as they have said, okay, this is how football should be played. This is the only way we'll play football. So if you don't fall within this line, you will not even be in contention for the national team, no matter how good you are. So I want to believe that this issue that they keep having, because the reason why they keep getting into penalties for me is because they don't take enough risk. They play all the ball. You see both teams usually control the ball well, but they don't do enough in the final third because they don't go out to break down the door. So they just keep it safe, and then it draws on, and the opposition knows that so long as we stay in position, we'll drag it into penalties, and then it becomes a 50-50 chance. So beyond just probably doing things the same way, probably they also need to go back to the drawing board and look at what kind of players are we developing that will get to that level to reflect on the national team.
I do agree with you. A lot of dynamism was missing, particularly when it comes to attack. And I was particularly disappointed with Luis Enrique from the time he drew up his squad. I kind of had a feeling, I mean, that this was going to happen to Spain anyway. Like you said, it's been happening over time. But I still, there was a time that they had very good strikers. Recently, they've not had them really very good, but someone like Thiago Aspas, you could see that Thiago Aspas has been probably the best Spanish striker, particularly in La Liga for about the last 3 years, technically very good. In fact, if he comes to penalty, he's one of those guys that could lead the line and probably take one. We've been seeing him doing it very well in La Liga for Celta Vigo. So I thought picking out a Morata or any other guy or avoiding picking strikers who could really, who are really different, who could bring dynamism into the team is where the failure started from with Spain. And you could see Portugal too. Portugal, even though they had some good strikers, Portugal also had some, you remember we were speaking about this yesterday, Portugal also had some element of what went wrong with Spain, which we're discussing right now. Yeah. Portugal also had an element of that in the quarterfinal. They played a lot of the ball, good passing game, good midfielders and all. But you see, when it comes to having that cutting edge, the difference with Portugal is that they have strikers that can finish, but they were not directing the ball to the finishers. Most of their balls forward were not so focused that the finisher can actually get good opportunity to finish. I feel the match that they won 5-0, where Ramos scored about a hat-trick, I felt there was going to be a change from them, but apparently it was. I mean, they flattered to deceive.
Yeah, I mean, just to wrap it up, someone first asked me, why do I think Spain lost? And I said, I think they lost because they lacked variety. So when I say they lacked variety, yes, you brought on Iago Aspas. There are a couple of other players, Borja Iglesias, that could have given them
Dani Parejo.
Several players that we can continue to mention that could have given. Even Jeremy Pino was on the bench. The others were not even picked. He was on the bench and he did not get a game. Then considering that Spain did something differently with Nico Williams on the right and they could see joy from it, I would have thought that Nico Williams would come on the left. During that extra time against Morocco, Spain had Sarabia, Dani Olmo, and Ferran Torres on the pitch. I mean, these are players that are similar, very similar in mold. It is that level of variety that I think hurts Spain. While I would say that the Netherlands does not have that option to even go on that level of variety, the only thing I think they did not do enough was when they were chasing the game, they brought on Weghorst and De Jong, and they started lumping the balls into the box. And they got 2 goals, but then they got into extra time and they stopped doing that. They stopped doing that particularly. And when you stop doing that, these two guys, their strengths are in the air. So it's as good as you're playing on the ground with 9 players. So some of these things I feel, football is easier said with hindsight, but some of these things I also feel, again, are basic. And at that level of football management, people being paid to do the job should be able to see much more of it.
I do agree with you. Fortune, they say, favors the brave. I mean, of course, you know, it's not like maybe it's going to go that way every single time. But before I even comment on fortune favors the brave, I also wanted to point out some weakness in the Spain's match, because I don't know if we're going to have time to go back to the Spanish versus Morocco match. I mean, there was an anomaly, which I saw in Spain from beginning. I mean, why would you take so many defenders to the World Cup and then play Rodri as a center back? Why not then take a Sergio Ramos if Rodri is the guy that you are going to play as a center back? Even though I saw that Sergio Busquets had a very good World Cup, at least. I mean, maybe not brilliant, but at least quite good. I thought that Rodri was a player that would play more ball forward. You understand? When it comes to chasing goals, like than Sergio Busquets. So, I mean, just to point that out. Before I talk about the risk, which we're talking about, that Netherlands failed to take. Yes, I agree with you, but it is understandable. LVG said something that I read about in the press, and he was talking about not having top level wingers. Well, the truth was, as at the time they scored their second goal, Argentina had gone into a full defensive mode. And well, I feel Argentina is one of those teams that had very good or very strong defense in this team. So, and In addition to having a very strong defense, you know that Messi is a player that can nick any goal at any time. They also have Alvarez and some of those kind of players, Di Maria, who came later on, who can score at any point in time. So, I mean, the conservatism, well, I can understand a bit of that. When you go to knockout phase, especially extra time, is it will be good, it could be good to conserve your energy and then make sure that you are very precise. But like you said, that risk of De Jong, who is taller, I expected more balls to be lumped into the box, especially with Shot Martinez right there in the middle of that defense.
Yeah, the whole Argentine team, I'll give them credit in a short while, but the whole Argentine defense line struggled with the height. So I was surprised to see that in extra time, Netherlands resorted back into playing their safe,
Yes.
no risky football. But then
Yes.
Argentina was the team that lost their first game against Saudi Arabia. This is the team that comes into this competition as Copa America champions. And I remember in our last podcast, I mentioned it that I have seen them play a couple of times. They are not an entertaining team. They are not an enterprising team. They're not a team that will put you at the edge of your seat. They are much more of, I mean, you know what the German national team used to be? There is grit, there is tenacity, there is strength, there is physicality, and then they slug it out. And like you rightly said, they have Lionel Messi. They have somebody who would just out of nothing. I mean, see the fantastic pass he gave in the first game. Very few players in modern day football will be able to pick out such a pass. So that's the difference that he brings to the team. And that is why I always thought, even from the beginning, that they have that extra thing that could just make them go far. One of the things that I think also worked for Argentina so far is the luck of the draws. While I'm not trying to be disrespectful to the teams that they have played, they have played teams that you would expect them to win. Yeah, we have had Brazil also play teams that you expect them to win, and they are out of the competition. So I would love to give Argentina a whole lot of love. And particularly Lionel Messi. Messi has, I think after Mbappe, Messi has the second goal contributions in the World Cup. Considering that he's playing his last World Cup, or well, what I expect to be his last World Cup. I think he's been living up to the billing. I think he's been living up to the expectation. What are your thoughts on Argentina so far?
I mean, Messi, starting with Messi, Lionel Messi will be Lionel Messi. You know what this kind of players offer. It's difficult, to mention many players in the same breath as Lionel Messi. Perhaps if you are going to mention players in that breath, you could only mention Cristiano Ronaldo among those guys that are playing now, and then we'll have to go back to Ronaldo de Lima, and then maybe Pele, Maradona, and all those kind of players. So, I mean, Messi is doing exactly what we expected. Yeah, what we would expect from that kind of player is he's carrying the team, putting the right passes here and there. You could see that maybe the pace has slowed down, but like we always say, his game has changed. You understand? And even without judging him on the goals, I think even in the interplay and all, he has really been very, 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 very functional. Argentina has, the word to use for Argentina is that they have been solid. They haven't particularly been brilliant. I don't think they've played any kind of brilliant football. They haven't been so technical, but they've been disciplined, especially after their against Saudi Arabia, which was like a blip on an unexpected loss. And luck of the draw is just a normal thing in football. I mean, it will happen to one person or the other at one time or the other. It remains to be seen how much that luck will last in their next few games. But it is difficult not to see them along with France as the favorites from here. There are just two games remaining, and these are experienced players. They will know that it is just two games remaining, and they must have followed the World Cup very well and seen how many upsets and how easy it has become to upset the big teams. So I would expect them, like going into the semi-final, I would really expect them to like up their game. In fact, I'm expecting more of the same: discipline, resilience, tenacity, and maybe a messy brilliance here or there.
Yeah, so just to wrap it up, I read a tweet by Philipp Lahm. Lahm said that at the last World Cup final they played against Argentina, They, as German national team, they knew that the whole other 10 players were always looking for Messi, and that he felt that the main difference between that team and this team is that this team right now, while they are not that exceptionally talented or as talented as the 2014 set, they are willing to do things on their own and just let Messi come in for Messi to do his own. So the dependency on Messi in this particular team has, even though they still rely on Messi for being decisive, their general all-round play, which again has not been very enterprising, but has been very effective. One player that has stood out for me, though, is Enzo Fernandez. I think he has stood out particularly in that midfield. I think he came on, he was not starting until the game against Mexico. He came on against Mexico, he got that second goal, and since then, he's been playing in that middle with McAllister. I read about him. I see that he's 21 years old. He plays at Benfica. And I won't be surprised to see the big boys going for him anytime soon. Now, to move on from Argentina, let's move to Argentina's next opponent, which is going to be Croatia. And I have a whole lot of love for Croatia. Their middle three just sort of redefine football. I can't remember a middle three that has comfortable on the ball since the days of the Xavi, Iniesta and co. I don't know a middle three that they're not particularly, you cannot call them a tiki-taka three. They're a three that can really mix it up. Whether I want to do the short passing, they are comfortable with the ball. They're comfortable without the ball, with their movements and without their movements. But I'd like to start from what their manager said before they played Brazil. And I think that also reflects against Argentina. So when he was asked how they will approach Brazil, he said, without being disrespectful, he's going to say that Croatia is not coming into that game as an underdog because Brazil has not played a team that play like them. And that's the key thing for me because Croatia, just like Argentina, are effective. They know what they want to do. You know what you get from them. They're not going to run at you, you know, like Mbappe would run or Dembele would run at you from the flank. They will build up gradually. They will be patient. They'll wait for their chance, and then they'll hit you once they have the chance. They don't need a whole lot of chances to do that. And I want us to reflect a little on that Brazil game because while we may have both agreed that France, England, was technically a quality game, I think that was also another very exciting game. And the technical quality was also up there.
Yeah, I do agree with that in terms of technical quality. I would rank it second after that France-England game, probably because Croatia is maybe a smaller name also in international football, but they quite have some big players like Brozovic, Perisic, Modric, Kovacic, and all those guys. And my respect really goes to their coach, to be very honest. I'm glad you spoke about the coach. And my respect goes to him. And the reason I respect him really is what I've always been saying about coaches, over time. You see, and I've also been mentioning this in some of my criticisms against Pep Guardiola. I am somebody who doesn't believe in maybe a philosophy or a team strategy without the talent of the individual. I believe that the best way to play a game, the best way to approach a game is always to find... The best way to approach a game is always to find the individuality in collectivity. What am I saying? What do I mean by this? Look, I believe in the group because a team is a group, but I believe in creation of system where the I believe in creating a system where the individuality of players can thrive based on the manager understanding the strength of each player, because the contribution of each player is what determines the team performance. The manager apparently knew his strength, and I think he stuck to it. And he played, against Brazil. What am I talking about? If you look at that midfield on that day, Croatia sort of dominated it, took it away. They barely even had any real shots, many shots against the Brazilian goalkeeper because they didn't have as much quality in attack as they had in the middle. You understand? But they knew their strength and they used it. Unfortunately for Brazil, this is about the first time in the history of football since I have been following it that Brazil will not really even have any schemers. If you look at their midfield, they didn't really have any ball holders or any passer, or so they had to drop Neymar closer to the midfield for the purpose of creativity. So what I was surprised that the coach of the Brazil could not read that. He was struggling for most of the match until the end to try to grab the midfield from Croatia, which I feel he shouldn't have done. I felt, look, it would have been better because most of the Brazilian players looked more like they had quality for the counter-attack. You know, Vinicius, Rodrigo and all, they would run at you. Neymar would run at you. Why don't you play to your strength? So I think that is where Brazil lost it for me. And that is why I'm giving the Croatian manager the credit. Very, very good at what they do, the team. They know their strength. They play to it. They don't score a lot, right? But they are patient enough to know that, okay, one chance will come and I could take it. And I think that is what paid off, the resilience. I saw a question that Luka Modric was asked that, is there a similarity between the Croatian team and the Real Madrid team that he's played for recently? And I quite agree with him. And he said, look, Real Madrid doesn't die until the end. And they wait and they are resilient and they just keep focusing on their football. And that's exactly what happened with this Croatian national team. If they go on to the final and France go on to the final, then we'll be having a repeat of last year's last final. And I mean, they would have justifiably been in the final. I mean,
yeah, I mean, it's huge credit to Croatia. This is a country of about 4 million people, and you wonder a country that has not been in existence for that long. You understand what I mean when you compare to a whole lot of other bigger nation footballing countries, and how they have been able to churn out talent, I mean, consistently. Now, in addition to those that you have called, let's not forget that Ivan Rakitic was playing a while ago. He was at the last World Cup. So you can imagine the quality of Rakitic that team has lost, the quality of Mandzukic. And up till now, I still don't think that they have a replacement for Mandzukic yet. And there have been Vardol, the mask man in defense, and he's been very immense. He's the player that I have noticed as a standout, how do I put it, the breakout player in their team. And I won't be surprised if any of the top European clubs pick him up after the World Cup. I enjoyed watching Croatia from the first game they played against Morocco. I have been fortunate enough to follow their games. I like how they play their games. I like how they build up their games. Again, I'll use the word clarity. There is clarity of purpose. It's not just a team like I can refer to how Portugal played against Morocco. It's not just a team that's just lumping the ball for somebody in the box to at least flick or put it into the net. It's a team that, even though they were a goal down against the almighty Brazil, who is the favorite, they stuck to their ideas. They moved the ball faster. They used the flank. They dropped the ball in. So you see the clarity of purpose there. And particularly, that's what I think will give them an edge against Argentina. Because, again, we have seen Argentina lose to Saudi Arabia. I've seen Argentina lose their head against the Netherlands. They have lost a two-goal lead to Netherlands. They have also conceded against Australia. And afterwards, against Australia, it became chaos till the game ended. So I've pointed to like almost all the games that Argentina have played. And I see that this Argentine team, if you go and get...
The vulnerability is there.
Yes, yeah. Yes. If you go and get tough, they have this vulnerability. Okay, take for instance against Netherlands. Paredes had a very bad tackle on Nathan Ake. He stood up and he shot the ball at the Dutch bench. That was what started all the chaos. And he should have been sent off. Ideally, he should have been sent off. The situation may have changed. We may have been having a different conversation right now, probably if you were sent off at that point in time. Now, you're going to play against a Croatian team that they're experienced, they're usually settled, they're unruffled, they know just what they have to do. If Croatia happens to get the first goal, it might become very difficult for Argentina to be able to regroup and come back into that game. But of course, again, they have Lionel Messi, so I won't rule it out of them. But that's the credit, that's the point, that's the strength that I think Croatia has coming into this World Cup. And you spoke about getting into the final with France. While I also think that France is still my favorite team to play, Croatia is that team I don't think anybody should want to play against. Because even though we all know what they would do, it's the most difficult person to play football against is the person that will not give you the ball. We know that Brazilian national team, for instance, one of the things Brazil struggled with was having to chase, because Brazil is not used to chasing. Brazil is used to having the ball. So while Argentina may have guys who can put in the grit, who can put in, at some point, when you start running, when you start chasing shadows, I mean, you will leave loopholes. And that is why I feel Croatia has a very big chance here. If it were not for the Lionel Messi fact, I think I'll be much more bullish for Croatia than I am going into this semifinal.
Yeah, well, I do agree with you. But talking about underdog killing the big team, we should not end this podcast without speaking about Morocco. I mean, wow.
Yeah.
It's been 8 hours of football, considered only one goal, unexpected, new manager came in, you know? And
yeah,
in the beginning of this World Cup, Samuel Eto'o did say that the two teams that will play in the final is Cameroon and Morocco. And, you know, well, if Cameroon had probably even taken their chances in earlier, probably, who knows, they probably would have played this Moroccan team. Sorry, yeah, this Croatian team. Who knows? Yes. They probably could have played this Croatian team, or probably whoever came, even a weaker team on the other side. You know what I mean? Yeah, so, I mean, Samuel Eto'o did call that one correctly, because, I mean, with the way Morocco is playing, they don't even look like they are an underdog to the very big team. I saw them against Spain. Yeah, they did win on penalties, but it was looking like, apart from the fact that Spain normally dominated possession, it was looking like, well, they were not going to get beat. And they are going now against France. France really done well. To be very honest, France is the favorite. But do I expect Morocco to come out of that? This World Cup has been crazy. It has been crazy.
Yep.
I saw how France went out of Euro. Switzerland, you know, just scored and France could not find their feet anymore. If any of that happens now, Morocco is the kind of team that can go through, and that would be Africa in the World Cup final for the first time. What are Morocco's chances?
Well, I was good. Of course, there was no way we would have done a podcast to review the World Cup semi-final and would not dedicate time to Morocco. I was hoping to put Morocco, in the light so that we'll round it up all with Morocco. But since you have brought it up, yeah, let's just get through it. Now, first of all, congratulations to the whole of Africa. I mean, this is Africa breaking another stride. We used to look out for quarterfinals before. Now it's semifinals. And who knows? We might be talking about final. And probably, even though I know it's very slim chance, probably even
winning. I will cut you short for a second and say also congratulations to the Arab world, because they can relate with Morocco as well.
So getting down to the nitty-gritty of it, Morocco has been a clear definition of what I'll call organization. So I remember reading a book a long time ago. I've forgotten the name of the book now. Hopefully I'll remember before the end of the podcast. And this book was talking about how, as a human being, for you to be successful, you need to first have yourself organized. And it gave an example of the chef. You see a chef on TV cooking, that while this chef is cooking, this chef, before the program starts, this chef has everything arranged. This chef has probably the egg, the broccoli, the pepper, the onions, everything he will use is around him. So he's not looking out for it in the air. He's just picking it and putting it into the pot and making the dish. So that's how he explained how organization should be for a human being that wants to be successful. And then you relate it to this Moroccan team. And let's first dissect it. The goalkeeper plays for Sevilla. Their right back plays for PSG. Their left back plays for Bayern Munich. They have guys that have played in the Champions League. Amrabat has traveled around the world. He's in Fiorentina. So it's not like the ingredients are not there.
The ingredients
are there. Yeah, they have Hakim Ziyech up front, Chelsea, El Nesyri, Sevilla. They have the ingredients. It's not like the ingredients are not there. They have the ingredients. What they needed was somebody to put it into a very good team. And this manager came I'm sure he sold his idea and was able to build a team to be compact. One thing you mentioned earlier, and if, believe me, if this were Italy that had this record of this defensive record, we'll all be going, oh, ah, about it. Oh, it's Italian defense, you know, and co. And these guys are not just defending by packing the balls, you know. Yes, Spain may have pushed them to the limit, but against Portugal, they had the high line. It was not like they packed the ball. It was not like they're a defensive team. They're just very resolute on that defense line, knowing that, okay, they're not going to cross. And whatever cross through, they have Yacine Bono in defense, who is able to then stop it. Portugal may not have done enough to have won that game. But another day, Portugal may have done enough to have broken down another defense. But you see, Morocco is beyond just being defensive. Because when they have the occasional times to go forward, you also see that, oh, there is something here. Now, Portugal started that game very well. And I think Morocco did not get into the game until like 30th or 35th minute. But you see, between that 35th minute and the end of the game, you could see that quite clearly, if these guys have a chance, they would punish you. And that is where they would need to rely on when it comes to France. France, everybody knows, you have Kylian Mbappe, you have Giroud, who has been fantastic. You have Ousmane Dembele, who can also create something out of nothing on the right. But then I feel that France's weakness is, again, when you attack them. Because I saw the English do it. The English took the game to France, and France were not that convincing. So Morocco may have gone through Spain, Morocco may have gone through Portugal, but France will come with a different test. Portugal and Spain played their whole game with Moroccan defense backing their post and facing the ball. France will pull the ball behind you. France players will run behind you. We saw how Mbappe ran with Kyle Walker. Those are the kind of things Achraf Hakimi would expect. Those are the kind of things Mazraoui will expect if he's fit. Because Dembele would turn you left and right. He will go to the right, he'll go to the left, he will cross. So France will not come at Morocco the same way Portugal were pulling the ball or the same way Spain were knocking the ball around. France will come directly one-on-one on you. So chances that Morocco would leave that game, whether 90 minutes or 120 minutes with clean sheet, for me, I am not going to bet on it. However, if Morocco wants to be successful, Morocco too will have to also perfect at the other end of the pitch, such that when they run at France, and they may want to run at France, I mean, my opinion, I feel France's left side of the defense is where they can get much more joy. Aside from the fact that that is where Hakim Ziyech is, Theo Hernandez really struggled with Bukayo Saka. So quite clearly, he's not comfortable when you have somebody running at him who can switch him to the right and to the left. On the right side of defense, you have Jules Koundé, who is a central defender, but who is a better defender also. So if I could have a minute with the Moroccan coach, and believe me, I hate it when I say this because I want to believe that they are professionals who understand the game much more than I do, but then I think that is the place where they will find much more joy and they will need to score goals.
They will definitely need to score goals, but that is where African teams usually struggle. I hope it is not a struggle for Morocco because I really want to see them in the final as much as I want to see France in the final and as much as I want to see Croatia in the final and as much as we want to see France also play against Argentina. But, man, it is what it is.
Well, however it goes, I hope the best team wins. Or worst case scenario, even if Morocco does not get through France, I hope that they would win the third place match so that at least they'll have a medal. It will be too sad to go through all these level of emotions and then come out of the World Cup without any medal at all. So before we wrap up, let me just ask you this question. I know you said you have not really watched the World Cup, but from the games that you have seen, how does this World Cup rank compared to other World Cups that you have seen over the years?
I will USA 94, France 98 will always be my pick ahead of the others. But I think the quality of this World Cup is a bit high, and I feel that this is a balanced World Cup with a lot of upset where you don't have maybe the favorites just cruising through. Although in the first round also, I also feel like in the group phase, the presence of some weak teams also did not make the group phase as tough as it should have been. But particularly in the third games, there were some really very, very good games. Compared to, say, 2006 in Germany, I think I would pick this World Cup. Compared to, say, 2014 in Brazil was also quite good. I like the quality, but I feel this World Cup is also high up there because a lot of the teams are even in terms of level and quality.
All right. On that note, guys, we'll be wrapping up today's episode. Jide will be back again after the semifinals, right?
Yeah, we'll be back again.
All right. Take care of yourself and each other. Take care, guys.